We believe in the resurrection. Our oldest creeds confirm this. But if you take stock for a moment and think about what it is that we believe, there are some questions that I suppose we need to answer, and we will try and do that this morning. We believe that a man died and was raised to life. Take stock of that. That is a big claim to make. It is a very, very big claim to make, and surely that has to be able to be backed up with some kind of evidence. I'll just begin by saying that even historians who are skeptical of Christianity are unlikely to challenge the historicity of Jesus. And what I mean by that is that even scholars who disagree with the beliefs of Christianity will nevertheless confirm that, yes, the man Jesus actually lived, that there was a historical figure that Christians believed in, and his name was Jesus. He lived. He was a real person in history. And in part, it's not just because there's this abundance of Christian writings concerning that person, Jesus. It's that writers who weren't Christians themselves also wrote and testifies that this man, Jesus, was a real historical figure. So for instance, you have a Roman historian named Tacitus who wrote in his time, he wrote of Christus, which is his reference to Christ. Christus, who suffered the extreme penalty during the reign of Tiberius at the hands of Pontius Pilatus. All these Latin words mixed in there. So you have ancient historians who wrote about the man Jesus. You have another man named Josephus, who twice makes references in his history books. He was a Jewish historian, but not a Christian. He did not believe that Jesus was the Christ, as Christians believe he was the Christ. But he was an ancient historian, and he wrote about Jesus. He said, about this time there lived Jesus, a wise man, if indeed one ought to call him a man, for he wrought surprising feats. That's a reference to miracles. He did things that were surprising. He was the Christ. When Pilate condemned him to be crucified, those who had come to love him did not give up their affection for him. So an ancient writer also confirms the reality of Jesus as a historical figure. So if you have doubts about whether Jesus was really real, I hope things like that helps you a little bit. But this morning, I'm not here to defend whether Jesus really lived. I think there's good evidence to believe that he did. But I'm not here to defend that, because even skeptical historians will not challenge that assumption any longer. I'm here to defend a much more controversial claim this morning. I want to talk about the resurrection, a very controversial thing that Christians do believe in. The claim that Jesus really died, and yet he rose again 3 days later. That is controversial. And now I want to talk about that in a bit more detail. So if you have a Bible, I just invite you at this point to turn to 1 Corinthians and chapter 15. I'll have the words on screen, and we'll just begin reading in verse 1 through this passage of Scripture, particularly thinking about the resurrection itself. The Apostle Paul writes to the church in a city called Corinth, and he writes to them, I would remind you, brothers, of the gospel I preached to you, which you received, in which you stand, and by which you are being saved, if you hold fast to the word I preached to you, unless you believed in vain. For I delivered to you as of first importance what I also received, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures, that he was buried, and that he was raised on the third day in accordance with the Scriptures, and that he appeared to Cephas, then to the 12. Then he appeared to more than 500 brothers at one time, most of whom are still alive, though some have fallen asleep. Then he appeared to James, then to all the apostles, last of all, as to one untimely born, he appeared also to me. For I am the least of the apostles, unworthy to be called an apostle, because I persecuted the church of God. But by the grace of God I am what I am, and his grace toward me was not in vain. On the contrary, I worked harder than any of them, though it was not I, but the grace of God that is with me. Whether then it was I or they, so we preached, and so you believed. To help us through this passage and the claim that it makes, I want to ask this question. Is it credible to believe in the physical resurrection of Jesus? Is there good and sufficient evidence that we can trust that Jesus did in fact rise from the dead? As we tuck into those kinds of questions, I just want you to consider what Paul was asking the Corinthian church to do and to believe. Here was a group of Christians who themselves had not seen the resurrected Jesus, and yet Paul was asking them to believe that he really was resurrected. So in many ways, the Corinthian church is like us. Few of us that I'm aware of, or any of us that I'm aware of, has actually seen the risen Jesus. As far as I'm aware, Jesus has not appeared to any of you physically resurrected. And yet, we as Christians believe in that Jesus. We believe in the physically resurrected Jesus. And we do so not because we're superstitious, not because there is a not because we are anti-science kind of people, and certainly not because we are uneducated simpletons. These are not the reasons we believe in the resurrection of Jesus. We believe in it because, in part, we consider the evidence that's been presented to us of the eyewitnesses, especially like those named in this passage, and we weigh the evidence and say, is it credible? Is that kind of evidence sufficient for us to trust and believe? Are eyewitness reliable? Can we trust the things that they tell us they have seen? So I just want to ask one more question. Are eyewitnesses reliable? Can you trust the kinds of things that eyewitnesses tell you they've seen? Could we really believe in something we did not see for ourselves? Especially when it comes to something so important as the resurrection of Jesus. None of us were there in history to see that happen. So are these eyewitnesses reliable? Can we hang so much of our faith on something that we did not see for ourselves? So I'm just asking, are eyewitnesses reliable? If you think about that question, I suspect many of us will say we do find eyewitnesses reliable. That we rely on eyewitness testimony almost every day of our lives and we accept it as true and believable, even if we didn't see the events unfold ourselves. We do this in courtrooms, do we not? Where a case goes to trial, we bring in eyewitnesses. Though we weren't there to see what happened, the jury just has to believe what the eyewitnesses saw, that their testimony is credible. Or you think about even trivial kind of examples. How many of you believe that Emirates Team New Zealand won the America's Cup? Do you believe that actually happened? Why do you believe that happened? On what basis do you believe that to be true? Were you in Bermuda? Were you there? There you go. So we're just saying, we believe that that actually happened because of the eyewitness reports of people like Peter Montgomery and other commentators. We believe the video feed that comes through our TV screens. We believe that video feed wasn't a hoax or a staged propaganda. We believe the testimonies that others tell us of an event. And we accept it as true that that actually happened. Every day we do this in all sorts of ways, even though we were not there ourselves. We will believe an eyewitness as true and credible and reliable. And this is all that the apostle is asking the Corinthian church to do at this point. You yourselves weren't there to see the resurrected Christ, but others were. Will you trust them? Will you weigh their testimony and just consider that maybe they too are reliable sources of information? That they're not trying to trick you. They're not trying to falsify a claim. They are true and credible, that you might believe in the resurrected Christ. If you doubt that Jesus was resurrected from the dead, I would just ask you to consider the same thing this morning. Would you consider the eyewitness testimony of those who did see, or who claimed to see, that they saw Christ resurrected? And would you just weigh their testimony and just say, can that be reliable? Can I trust them? Can I at least for a moment consider that their account of things may be no less reliable than my evening news and the eyewitness reports that I believe throughout my day? Could you just for a moment consider that they too are reliable? At this point, I want to raise three common objections. Three common objections to the claim that Jesus was resurrected. There are three things inquisitive and thoughtful yet skeptical people might say in objection to the claim that Jesus was raised, physically raised, from the dead. These are the kinds of things that you might just encounter as you meet with your neighbors, as you meet with other parents, or wherever it is that you do community, your workers that you employ, or the boss that you work for. These are the kinds of things that people would commonly say when they think about the resurrection and why they would oppose or object that that can actually be true. The first of these objections is simply this, that the eyewitnesses were primitive religious people that would readily believe in resurrection stories. That's the first objection that you would commonly hear. That witnesses were primitive religious people who readily believed in resurrection stories. We, as modern people, tend to suffer from a kind of chronological snobbery towards previous generations, and especially towards ancient people, ancient cultures. We suffer from chronological snobbery. At one level, we think of them as less advanced, and simply we mean by that because they didn't have cell phones and the internet, they must be stupid. They must be naive and ignorant folk. So it's this chronological snobbery because we have made so many scientific advancements, people before us must be idiots. While some ancient cultures do exhibit a great deal of superstition and fanciful stories that perpetuate their religious beliefs, that claim that these people who were talking about the resurrection of Jesus, who claimed to see that Jesus was resurrected, to say that they were just simply ignorant and superstitious people that fell in with their religious beliefs, that will not stick to Jewish people from whom these stories originated. It will not stick when you look at the evidence to say that, oh, Jews were just stupid, ignorant, and superstitious people that would readily believe in the bodily resurrection of someone once dead. It won't stick. And here's why. No Jew, let alone Peter, James, Paul, or any of the 12 that was mentioned in this passage, would readily believe that a person could come back to life, let alone just 3 days after their death. They didn't believe that. Later on in Acts, you can read about a confrontation between two groups of Jews who hotly debated this issue, but none of them believed that you can just die and then 3 days later be alive again. They had no religious categories for that kind of thinking. There were only two dominant thoughts about resurrection in Jewish religious framework. One group of Jews believed in some kind of resurrection, but not a bodily resurrection. They would be most similar to people in our day and age that believed in life after death in some kind of spiritual sense. That when your body dies, that's it for your physical being, but then some inner spiritual being of yourself will live on forever. That was one way of thinking amongst the Jewish people. But definitely not a physical resurrection. So they would not have come up with this story. The other group of Jewish people thought differently about the resurrection. They thought, yep, there could be a physical resurrection. Bodies raised from the ground. But not yet. They believed that if there is a resurrection that would come at the end of the age, when it all wraps up, when the apocalypse happens, the dead will be raised. But no way would they have believed that a person could now in history, before the end of the age, be raised from the dead. It simply does not square to think of them as just simply superstitious people that went with the religious thoughts of their day. Jews had no category for thinking about a resurrection in history before the end of the age, let alone a physical resurrection, which is what many of these Jewish people were now claiming. So, let me just say, though the eyewitness did have a religious framework, it is highly unlikely that they would have invented this story of a physical resurrection because it does not fit their existing religious paradigm or outlook on life. So that's one reason why we can believe in the credibility of their account, that they weren't just superstitious going with the flow of the day. A second objection that you might encounter, this is quite common, it's probably the most common these days, is that people will claim that the eyewitnesses were hallucinating. They imagined that they saw Jesus resurrected. So, objectors would simply say, look, I know the Bible says that Jesus was resurrected from the dead, but let's just consider for a moment. Maybe they all envisioned it. Maybe they were all dehydrated and they saw something like a mirage. Maybe that's what they believed about the resurrection. The objection does have some merit. If there was only one or two witnesses. If there were just one or two people running around in ancient Israel saying, hey, we saw the resurrected Jesus, sure. Yeah, we could maybe discredit them and say, look, you guys are out of your brains, wild crazy. You guys are just, you've lost it. The problem is, there are so many sightings of the resurrected Jesus that I'm just asking, can we really dismiss all of these sightings, not just one or two, but all of these sightings, that happened throughout various locations, throughout a period of time, could we dismiss all of them and just say, you were all hallucinating? For one, hallucinations are by their very nature individual, not corporate experiences. So that's one reason why we can't just discount all of these people as having hallucinated Jesus. But this is not what we find with the sightings of the resurrected Jesus. They weren't just individuals, one or two. There were large sightings and numerous sightings. This is not just a case of two potheads in the desert getting wasted and having a mystical vision. There were lots of people that saw Jesus, 500 at one time. I mean, you think about that. That is a big group of people that all saw the same thing. We can't just discredit that and say all 500 were hallucinating. Or that even the 12 of Jesus' disciples thought that they just hit the bong one day and were hallucinating. It wasn't like that. There are too many sightings throughout too many occasions to discredit all of it as hallucinations. The evidence doesn't stack up in favor of all those people having experienced some kind of hallucination. There is a third objection. There's a third objection that you might find. It goes something like this. Objectors will say there were no actual witnesses. That these stories you read in your Bible, that's just myth. It was just invented by later Christians to prop up their religious power over others. This view is usually held among liberal Christians and liberal academics. It is the claim that when Christians talk about the resurrection, what they're really talking about is something figurative. They don't really mean resurrection. Christians mean like it's a metaphor or a turn of phrase. It's figurative, not a physical thing. And that perhaps even that the resurrection story was made up to gain religious power over gullible and uneducated people. That's how that objection sometimes goes. Very few confessing Christians of my generation would hold that view. There are none of my peers who serve as leaders in the Christian church anywhere that would still hold this view. But it is a view that gained a foothold among a generation slightly older than my own. So I just mention this because you might have parents or grandparents that were greatly influenced to believe about the resurrection this way. That the resurrection was more of a spiritual thing than a physical thing. That it was a way of explaining life after death when really there wasn't any. So let's just take a moment to think about this objection. The claim is often said that the Christians invented this because they were in a power play. They were trying to exercise religious power over gullible and uneducated people. But let's think about this. By the time claims were being made that Jesus was physically raised from the dead, Christians were an oppressed minority. They were heavily persecuted by a powerful state. One emperor, Nero, he would take Christians He would impale them in his garden while they were still alive. He would cover them in flammable liquid, light them up, and ride his chariot around them, shouting, "Now you truly are the light of the world." That's how Nero treated Christians. Christians were not in the position of power. They were on the receiving end of misused power. And yet they continued to believe in the physical resurrection. So I'm just asking you, on the receiving end of misused power, what kind of a person would pay such a heavy price for a fairy tale? Why wouldn't a person just simply say, "You're right, Nero, look, I don't really believe these things. It's just a story that helps me cope with life. I don't really mean that I believe in a resurrected Jesus or any of the Christian claims. It just makes me feel better. That's why I believe them. They're not really true." Nobody goes to their martyrdom for believing in a fairy tale that way, for believing in a story that they know is not actually real. The fact that Christians routinely accepted persecution rather than deny their beliefs meant that they were convinced that their claims were accurate and true and was a real historical event. That Jesus really did rise from the dead. And not just figuratively speaking, not just make believe, not just pretend raise from the dead, that he really did rise from the dead. And surely, if that is true of Jesus, that those people who suffered that kind of persecution would have the sure and certain hope that they too shall live beyond death, just as Jesus lived beyond death and took up physical life again, thus paving the way for all who would follow him. That is why Christian martyrs throughout the ages have suffered so well. They suffered well. It astonishes people that Christians embrace martyrdom the way that they do. That they have this undeniable hope and assurance that that is not the end. That they may burn the body, but there will come a day where that body will be resurrected, because Christ was resurrected. That is why so many Christians throughout the ages have suffered so well. So let's just return then. The objection that Jesus' resurrection was a myth invented by power-hungry Christians does not accord with the history in which these claims came about. Christians were a minority oppressed by a powerful state. And secondly, to say that the resurrection is merely figurative rather than literal does not account for the momentum and the fortitude and the conviction amongst the early Christians to count all things as loss, including their own lives, for the sake of believing in Jesus. Fairy tales do not engender the kind of conviction that early Christians had under the strong arm of persecution. Fairy tales do not have that kind of power. Early Christians firmly believed not in a mythical resurrection, but in a real flesh and blood resurrection, that Jesus' body was physical, like my hands are physical, my body is physical. Think about that for a moment. Christians believe in the kind of resurrection where Jesus could say to one of his doubting disciples who questioned the resurrection, one of his disciples did not believe, and Jesus said to his disciple, "See my hands, and put out your hand and place it in my side. Do not disbelieve, but believe." The resurrected Jesus was a physical Jesus with vocal cords. Think about that. Vocal cords that could make sound and speak. That's the kind of resurrection we believe in. That Jesus had vocal cords by which to speak to Thomas, who doubted him. And our resurrection that we believe in was physical, where people were able to touch Jesus. He wasn't just a ghost that you'd swipe at and he disappeared. Thomas could touch him. He could lay his hands on a physical object, on skin and flesh and bone. That's the resurrection that Christians believe in. It's real and tangible. And that is the kind of resurrection that these eyewitnesses encountered. And that is how Christians throughout the church history have believed. This morning, we've looked at three common objections. But I want to return to our main question. Is it credible to believe in the resurrection of Jesus? Is there good, robust, and sufficient evidence that we can trust? I'm satisfied there is. But you're going to have to figure that out for yourself. You will have to wrestle with the evidence for yourself. Can I rely on the eyewitnesses? That's the kind of question you will need to settle in your own heart. But I do want you to settle on the question. Make no mistake, I don't want you to be ambivalent about what you believe about the resurrection. And here's why I would urge you to think more deeply about the issue of the physical resurrection. If the resurrection is just a myth, a fairy tale of the Christian faith, if that's all it is, you should leave Christianity immediately. I mean that. You should leave. Don't tolerate Christianity any longer if the resurrection is just a fairy tale or a myth. If the resurrection of Jesus did not really happen, at best, what Jesus has to offer you is a moral code. A moral code that will ultimately not matter once you die. It might help you now, up until the grave, but after that, it's just a moral code and it dies with you. That's the best that Jesus can offer you if the resurrection is not true. At worst, the teachings that Jesus offers you, at worst, would be nothing more than the ramblings of a madman that was self-deceived and deluded. If the resurrection is not true, Jesus' teachings would be much like a madman rambling. Either way, if the resurrection did not happen, Christianity is ultimately meaningless to you. Ultimately, it is meaningless. You should abandon it with great hurry if the resurrection isn't true. And we'll talk more about this next week. But if the resurrection is true, everything in your life must change. Everything in your life must change. If God did act in history and demonstrate his power over death, that even death was defeated by God when he raised Jesus from the dead, if that did happen, if that is a historical fact, surely we can't just shrug that kind of claim off as no biggie. We can't just consider that claim mildly important. It's the kind of claim that you can't just shrug off as marginally important to human history and to you individually. If that happened, it demands further investigation. It invites you to consider Jesus and what he actually accomplished in history. That is how important our claim is. It is not a mildly important claim of Christianity. We hang everything on it. Everything. And we will look more at that in the verses to follow next week.